Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys.
Hi John, how are you honey?
Good. Everything's so well.
Welcome. John, how are you tonight, hon?
Good. How's everything going, Joanne?
I'm okay. I apologize, guys. I just walked in the door. You guys are going to have to bear with me tonight. I'm a little discombobulated. But anyway, tonight, we have a little twist tonight. Usually we have music, actors, but we've had authors on before. But tonight's authors are not only authors, but they're books relate to the mafia. So I'm calling it Mafia Author Night. So with us on the phone is Mr. Rick Perrello, and he is the author of a book that was just released called Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes. It's the story of the notorious Jewish mobster, Alexander Burns. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, Joanne and John. Thank you. Great to be here.
Oh, thank you for joining us, please. Listen, I apologize for my ignorance. I did not know there was a Jewish mafia, so you have to fill me in on this.
Oh, gosh, by way of just a quick introduction, I mean, some of the Jewish mobsters going back to the 30s through maybe the 60s or 70s were as powerful, in some cases more powerful than their Italian-American counterparts. I mean, of course, the Meyer Lansky comes to mind is one you might be familiar with. But absolutely, the Italians and the Jews worked closely together in the National Crime Syndicate.
Yeah, because I've heard of the Russian mafia. I've heard of the Italian mafia. Obviously, everybody knows that. But I didn't know there was a Jewish mafia. It's crazy.
Well, I don't know that there's much. I don't think there's much left of it now. But like I said, this would hark back to maybe the 20s through the 1960s.
Hmm. So is this Jewish mafia prominently in the area where you were a police officer, or is it all over?
No. By the time I got on the police force, I don't think there were too many. There was maybe one or two prominent Jewish racketeers who were closely allied with the Cleveland Mafia at that time, but there's not much of that left anymore.
And that's Cleveland, Cleveland area, right? That you were
and
a police
Cleveland,
officer,
right.
Yeah.
Northeast Ohio, yeah.
And you've also written other books as well, correct? I mean, you've got a slew.
I have. Yeah, I've written four books about the mob, organized crime, traditional organized crime, the mafia, and I got started with my first book, The Rise and Fall of the Cleveland Mafia, due to curiosity about my grandfather's murder.
Oh.
He was killed in 1932, and you know, as I was growing up,
sorry,
I heard that I had a grandfather. My own father was only 5 or 6 years old when his father was killed. But as I was growing up as a young teen, you know, I heard that I had a grandfather that had been killed that had something to do with the mob, but nobody really knew a whole lot, and they didn't talk about it.
Right.
Yeah, and as I got older, I researched, and I was very curious, and as a result, I wound up writing and publishing my first book, and continued on in that area.
Yeah, well, you're not only an author and a police officer. I mean, you're also a famous musician as well, which is amazing to me. I mean, you've got.
Well, I don't know that I'm.
You definitely wear a lot of hats.
I've been blessed with success in several areas, Joanne. I
well, You played with Count Basie. You were on Johnny Carson. I mean, come on. I mean, those are pretty.
Those were incidental to my job as a drummer for Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes.
Which I did for 2.5 years, following my brother Ray. He's 9 years older. He was Sammy Davis Jr.'s drummer for about 6 or 7 years, and then when he left, I was able to take over that seat and travel for 2.5 years.
Oh, very cool, very cool. So how long were you actually a police officer?
33 years. Yeah,
wow.
Just retired a few months ago.
Oh, God, congratulations. I bet
you're
happy about that.
I am, although I gotta be honest, I do miss it. I do miss the work, and I especially miss the people that I worked with.
Well, other than, I don't know about your other books, other than Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes about Alex Chandra Burns, I mean, he is a true person. Are the other books based on real characters as well, or?
Yes, they're all nonfiction. Probably, I'm probably best known for my second book, To Kill the Irishman, which was adapted for the film Kill the Irishman, which came out in theaters in 2011.
Cool.
Had a terrific ensemble cast, and it co-starred Ray Stevenson, Val Kilmer, Christopher Walken, Vincent D'Onofrio, and a wonderful wonderful cast, and that was based on my second book, and it was about an Irish
mafia.
Yep.
That's crazy. So now, did you get your stories from your experiences as a cop, or just stories that things that actually happened, and you based it off of that? Are these things?
Yeah,
that
well, it would be a logical assumption.
Is this things you experienced?
It would be a logical assumption that that it came from my work in law enforcement. That's actually not the case. I really did nothing in organized crime as far as my police career. So all of the writing that I did was based on research that I did
over
the years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the book itself, the Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes.
Well, it's nonfiction. It's a completely true story, and follows the life of this Jewish racketeer from when he was a kid up until his last days. And incidentally, his character was portrayed in the movie Kill the Irishman by Christopher Walken.
Oh, really?
So
huh.
I kind of picked up from the research that I had done for that book, and then continued on. This was actually an 11-year project.
Wow.
I may not be a great writer, but I do write slowly. I do write slowly. Yeah, 11-year project, and I'm so glad that it's done. But it follows his whole career. You know, he came. He was brought here as an infant from Austria-Hungary, and he was 1 year old. He was never naturalized, so never became a citizen. I don't. It's a little mystery. It's one of the little puzzle pieces I wasn't able to find. But he's a great character. You know, anytime I write now, Joanne, I think of writing for either film or writing for a series. And he's a great character because he's got so many things that are so many challenges and struggles and people coming after him from the inside, from law enforcement at the local, state, and federal levels, the IRS. You know, he had been convicted of skimming from his nightclub, and he owed the government $50,000. Pretty soon that was $75,000, $100,000. The Internal Revenue Service was always after him. He was ordered deported at one time. He was under an order of deportation, but they were never able to find a country that would actually take him because of the way the boundaries changed after World War I. Mm. And of course, the local cops were trying to put him in prison. The FBI and it's just an interesting. It's an interesting story, and I think it's
how old was he when he was actually, was he the head of the Jewish mob, or was he just
I would say more he was really an associate or an ally of the Cleveland Mafia, but he was on the streets. He was one of the guys that was more comfortable. You know, he didn't move on with the men like Mo Dalitz and Lou Robocop. These were Cleveland Jewish racketeers who moved on into gambling, and they left the city. They moved out and developed casinos, and then they were moved on to Las Vegas and were part of the building up of Las Vegas. He, Schonderburn stayed in Cleveland. He was on the streets, and he kind of oversaw the numbers racket, the illegal lottery. I don't know if you had that back in your days in your particular area there. I think most major cities had an illegal lottery. They called it the numbers racket here. And it was mostly a black operation, very, very popular in the black communities, but not unpopular in the white communities. And there, you know, they'd bet a nickel or dime back in the 1920s and 30s, and by the time the 50s and 60s came around, they might be betting 50 cents. And there was a tremendous amount of money to be made. And he provided kind of a leadership and stability. He had a crew of enforcers to make sure that all of the numbers operators stayed at the same odds, and they didn't encroach on each other's territory to keep things operating smoothly.
It
was his job.
I unfortunately did not read the book yet, and I apologize for that. I will get to it. I hope so. And I don't mean to sound ignorant again, but is he still with us, or is he passed on?
No, he's no longer with us. In case anyone wants to read the book, I won't get into that too much more. But no, he'd be well over 100 years old.
Well, the only reason I ask is because someone commented on a post today when I said you guys were going to be on the show. And it said Schonderburn, and I was like, "What the hell was that? What is this guy?"
Oh, that's probably somebody who took his name.
Is this guy coming after me or what?
Yeah, right. I think that might be a relative, like a cousin that uses
started some kind of
using Schonder's name.
Yeah, I was like, "Oh my God, what am I getting into?" I got the mafia coming after me. Holy shit! And not just the mafia, the Jewish mafia. I'm like, oh my God! Because we've actually had other authors on that have done mafia books as well. I don't know if you know Nick Christophers. And,
I do know Nick. Yeah.
Yeah, he's coming back actually because he just released a new book, so we're probably going to have him back soon.
Wonderful.
Oh God, what's the other guy's name? Oh, his buddy. Oh my God, I haven't talked to him in a long time.
I know Nick has done some writing for my website, AmericanMafia.com. It's kind of a mafia history site.
Tell people about that.
This thing goes back probably 25 years. It's really an old website, and my partner does all of the technical work, and he archives everything, all of the contributions. I'm really more or less just the host of the site. But it's really the writers and contributors who have made it what it is. I wish I could devote more time to it because it's...
Well, now you're retired. You can do that now.
Well, I still have some writing projects. I was
just going to ask, are you working on anything else, anything coming?
I am. You know, I'm working with a co-writer now, and I told you, you know, as I write now, since I've had some success with Kill the Irishman becoming a film, I'm now thinking, you know, theatrically, motion picture series. So my co-writer and I, Danielle Alberico, are working on a mini-series based on Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes.
I was going to ask you if there was a screenplay adaptation of it.
Well, we are working on a pilot for a mini-series, and we'll have our draft in about 6 months or so.
Cool. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Well, if anybody wants to give a call and talk to Rick, please give us a call at 646-478-0999. And we'd also like to take this moment to welcome and say thank you to our sponsors, The Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, and Catskills Provisions, and also KWV Wine. Thank you so much. We love you. And John, do we have any callers by any chance?
But I got a question for Rick. When you were playing the drums for Sammy Davis Jr., did you meet the rest of the Rat Pack at that time? And if so, was there any involvement that you knew of? Because I think that they were saying Frank Sinatra was, you know, involved with the mafia in some way. Was there any truth to that?
Well, John, there certainly were times that we did cross paths with some of the Rat Pack members. Yeah. I remember a couple of shows in particular where Frank Sinatra was on. We did a benefit in Palm Springs. I think it was 1982, and with Sammy Frank and Dean and Nancy Sinatra, and that was of course a big event for me. I was just a kid. I was only about 19 or 20 years old, and some other special big events, benefits, and things like that where they would work together. But you know, as a young man, I really had no idea about their backgrounds and some of the allegations.
Oh, you were very young. I saw the picture. You look like you're maybe 19 or 20 playing.
Yeah, I had a lot of curly, bushy hair back then. And,
very handsome.
Well, thank you. I look like my son looks now. But there was also a lot going on in Las Vegas because we spent a lot of time in Las Vegas. But I had no idea at the time. You know, I think back now and you know, like watching the movie Casino and knowing about Spilatro and characters like that. There was a lot going on behind the scenes that I just was completely unaware of. Because I really had no interest in that time to research or learn about organized crime other than learning about what the story was with my grandfather's murder. And actually his three brothers, over a period of 2 or 3 years, three of his brothers were murdered also.
And were their murders mob related or
not? Yes, they were mob related. The seven Perrello brothers, they were essentially the second mafia family in Cleveland.
Wow.
And honestly, their reign did not last long. They competed with their one-time friends, the four Leonardo brothers, and that story is documented in my first book, The Rise and Fall of the Cleveland Mafia, and also in a documentary that's out there called Sugar Wars. And it was a war over control of corn sugar, which was used to make corn liquor during Prohibition. Lucrative business.
Yeah.
Very lucrative business to be in. But there was a lot of bloodshed.
Wow. So is that what you think?
Rick,
what
I got another question. I got another question for
John.
Rick. Joanne and I are both musicians, and you know, I like to, you know, so I didn't know you played the drums with Sammy Davis Jr. I mean you just can't go off and play with Sammy Davis Jr. You had to have some training, you had to learn. So what was your training to get to the point where you were able to play with you know, the big band like that?
Well, first, I grew up in a musical household. You know, my brother, 9 years old, Ray, he plays drums. We both played drums, and my father played drums also. So there were all, you know,
okay.
As far back as I can remember, it's just as a toddler, there were drums up. So I started sitting at the drums probably 4, 5, 6 years old and learning.
So you're self-taught?
Learning from my brother and father, you know, watching my brother play, learning from him, playing to albums and and my father was very close with the great drummer Louis Belson, who became an influence for my brother and I.
Oh, wow.
And then I was probably, 11 or 12 years old when I started taking private drum lessons here in Cleveland and studied for about 6 years and took piano lessons for a couple of years and then joined the my father got me into the Musicians Union. He was a Musicians Union official, and I joined when I was 16 years old and then started working with some bands here, age 16, 17, in Cleveland. And then when my brother left the show, left Sammy Davis Jr.'s show, then they auditioned me.
Right.
And I was pretty much just out of high school.
You look it.
I was. I was really young. I really was.
You look it.
And actually, I'm going a little bit of a different direction. You'd ask me what I'm working on writing-wise, and my co-writer and I, Danielle, we recently finished our first screenplay, and that's about an 18-year-old kid who gets the job of a lifetime traveling as a drummer for Sammy Davis Jr., and then he leaves the top of that industry to become a cop.
So coincidental.
Right. Based on my story, you know.
Autobiography.
Conflict. And so that we're just starting to starting to shop that around, and we're excited. We actually placed as semifinalists in the Chicago Screenplay Awards
nice.
2 weeks ago. So we're very excited about that.
Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. And it's actually the first book that I started writing. Was
oh, really? Years ago.
The road with Sammy Davis Jr. But it just it just fell to the back burner.
Who's ringing? Who's ringing?
That's my office line. Sorry.
Oh, So what actually started you writing? I mean, if that was your first book, I mean, what was your major in school, high school, and everything? Did you want to be a writer, or?
Joanne, I never had any aspirations to be a writer, but when I started researching my grandfather's murder, I went to the library, to the wonderful public library, and started looking at the newspaper archives. And when I saw, you know, I had no idea what would be in the newspapers.
Right.
And what I saw was a front page headline of my grandfather's murder. And he was murdered with his brother and their bodyguard.
Wow.
And it was huge. It was headlines. And then
right.
I continued research and continued. And pretty soon I realized that they were part of the beginning of the mafia in Cleveland. And I just knew it had to be told. It was a story that had to be told. There had to be a book written. And I just, something inside me told me I needed to write that book. And, you know, I started outlining and writing, and it was a
nine year
labor of love. Yeah.
Wow.
I finished after about 6 or 7 years, and then it took me another 2 or 3 to find a publisher.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And that was actually Barricade Books, who's based in New Jersey.
Oh, cool! I wanted to ask you this: being a police officer, did you get any problems, or anybody ever? I don't want to say bully, but did anybody give you any bullshit? The fact that your family was in the mafia, and did you find it hard to get that job as a cop since you had a background with mafia in your family? I mean.
You know, that's a great question, Joanne, but really so much time had elapsed. I graduated from the police academy in 1985, joined the first police department that I worked with in 1986 and worked there for a year and a half full time before I moved on. So by that period of time, the 1980s, it had been decades since my ancestors, my grandfather and uncles were involved in
part of Cleveland history. I'm sure, like
well, they knew. I mean,
right, of course, they knew.
Everybody
they
knew.
Had to
they
know.
Knew the name. In every anniversary of one of the murders, one of the newspapers in town would print a some kind of anniversary article, and so the name was known by a lot of people that followed that history.
No,
but,
I was just curious to know
it
if they
really
were,
didn't affect me negatively.
Good. I was just wondering if they thought maybe you were crooked, you know, coming in as a cop.
Right. No, I
guess
that's a fair question. That's a fair question. You know, had it been the 1940s and I was looking to get into the police department, that might have been tough. That might have been hard.
Right, yeah. Right. So what are you doing with your retirement other than writing and anything else? I hope you're going to relax a bit.
Well, isn't that enough? Because I'm telling you, we are meeting. I'm meeting with my co-writer a couple times a week, and then of course, you know, I just launched Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes, so I'm doing a lot of what I'm doing right now,
promoting,
publicity, and getting the book out there. And I have an interview with our local paper tomorrow morning.
Oh, excellent!
And then you know, when that's done in a month or two, I don't know. I may try and get back into the workforce, but I'll continue writing, and I hope to continue in the music business too.
Good. So, Rick, where can people get your all of your books other than the Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes?
Yeah, you know, I encourage them to go to their neighborhood bookstore, and it's probably not going to be at the shelf outside of Cleveland, but they can order it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in the main distribution system. They can order it, and if they can't find it at their local bookstore, of course it's available online at all of the major
Amazon.
Yep.
Great. Well, is there anything else you want to share with the audience out there in regards to your
book?
What
can I say? You know, you said you haven't got a chance to read the book yet.
No, I wish I could have. I apologize.
Yeah, I'll just tell you briefly. In one of the main storylines in the book is about a con man. He's actually a high finance con man, this shyster named Mervyn Gold, and it's really an interesting story, and it involves bonds, bearer bonds that were stolen from Canadian banks in the 1950s, and it was part of the mafia's effort at the highest levels to influence the Cuban Revolution to maintain their friendships with the Cuban government so that they could keep their casinos, you know, in Havana, which they made a lot of money from those casinos. So they wanted the Cuban government, when Castro was challenging Batista, and some of those bonds made their way into Cleveland, and you might say Mervyn Gold sort of backed Chandra Burns into a corner. And then Mervyn was indicted, and he fled to Canada. I'm sorry, he fled to Israel under the law of return, and tried to remain there and was not successful. And that's something that 10 years later, Meyer Lansky would do the same thing. He'd try to settle and live in Israel under the law of return, but that didn't work out for him either. So there's some international intrigue,
it sounds great. It really does.
Yeah,
it's an exciting book. It sounds very
part of
exciting.
The story.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. I just wanted to ask you another question. As a writer and musician, are you also a songwriter?
I am not a songwriter. I have composed a couple of jazz tunes. I wrote some music for someone once who had some lyrics, but I'm not really a songwriter now. To answer you.
Did you know that we had Dean Martin's daughter on last month, John? We had Dina on, and
last month.
Wonderful.
Yeah, have you ever met Dina?
No, I didn't even meet Dean. I waved to Frank Sinatra. He came out during a rehearsal, and Sammy's music director, George Rhodes, just pointed to me and he asked Frank if I had met Sammy's new drummer, and he introduced me from, I was up on the drum riser up, and he was down by the director there. Mm. We just waved. I waved to Frank Sinatra, so I guess you could say I met him, but no, I never met Dean Martin or his family. No.
Well, what a treat.
Would have loved to.
Yeah,
that's
what a
great
treat.
Photos, though.
Oh, yeah, she was a wonderful, wonderful person. Wonderful.
Uh-huh.
I was very happy to have her on. Very, what a treat. Very nice, very nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were living vicariously through her, of her father's life, which was nice. So, you know, it was a nice moment we had on. And it was funny because we had the Lone Ranger's daughter on the same night, and the two of them admired each other's father's work so much. Both of their parents did as well. And they had never met before, and they connected. They had connected here on the show, which is great. And I think they're friends now, which is cool. So,
all right. Well, that's a different way to make friends. Co-guests, fellow guests on a radio show.
Well, our next guest is Anthony Luciano Raimondo. Have you heard of him? He's also an author of mafia books, and he's got a book out right now. I'm wondering if you guys know each other.
Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with him or his work, to be honest. I'm not.
Well, we're going to get familiar with it in about 3 minutes, right, John? I believe we have him
That's
on
right.
hold. Or excellent.
And yes, Anthony's on hold waiting to come on.
Excellent. Well, Mr. Perrello, thank you, sir. It was an absolute pleasure. I wish you nothing but the best and good luck with the book, and congratulations on your retirement. Make sure you try and enjoy it a little bit. And if you ever want to come back, you can give us a call.
Well, thank you so much, Joanne.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate being with you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen,
have
Rick Perrello.
Have a Merry Christmas, Rick. Merry Christmas, Rick.
Yes, Merry
thank
Christmas,
you, John. Merry
to,
Christmas
you and,
to
you
guys.
To you and your family. And ladies and gentlemen, Rick Perrello, author of Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes. Go pick it up. I can't wait to read it myself. I would like to get a signed copy, but, you know, anyway, Rick, thank you so much. Yes, definitely Merry Christmas to you and your family, and take care. It was a pleasure, sir.
Thank you, folks. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Good luck. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And Anthony is waiting to come on, Joanne. Anthony, you're on.
All right. Hey,
yes, I'm here.
Anthony. All right. Let's here go. We go, ladies and gentlemen. I have a lot of questions for you, Anthony, because I'm just so confused. Because here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, we have with us Anthony Luciano Raimondo. Okay. And he wrote, and now I sound like Roseanne of Dan, okay? And he's the author of Bullet When the Bullet Hits the Bone. And in according to the story, which I have not read as well, I'm so sorry, Anthony. Reading is not something I have time for, but I do try to find time. But your story is based on you actually taking part in killing the Pope John Paul I. Is this really true?
Well, you know, when you listen to the reporters, they exaggerated a little bit. I was there when he died, and the circumstances was that he was poisoned by my cousin, which is Jacob Paul Marcinkus. He was a cardinal, and he was the head of the Vatican Bank. And my other
cousin
was a
So your cousin worked in the Vatican.
My cousin was a cardinal there, Paul Jacob Marcinkus, okay. And he was in charge of the Vatican Bank.
Cool. Okay.
And
so
then
why
I got
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead, you finish.
And then there was my cousin Luigi Raimondi was involved in that also. Antonio Rubino, he was another one. Corrado Belfort, he was another one. And Pietro Palazzo, he was another cousin of mine. They were all cardinals over there. I still have cousins that are in the Vatican now that are cardinals.
Hmm. And I don't mean to sound ignorant to you as well, but why, I don't know this story, why did people want the Pope dead?
All right. Back in the 70s, in the early 70s, there was a stock fraud scam where the Vatican forged the stocks that they had and they were selling them all over the country and all over the world.
Mm.
When I came home from Vietnam in 75, my cousin got in touch with me, Luigi Raimondi. He flew into the United States. He was telling me what they had. I said, yeah, sure, get them to me. They sent me the stocks. I brought them to a friend of mine who was in commodities, and he gave it to his nephew who was on the regular stock market. I also sent them out to Jersey. I had a guy out in Jersey that was doing them, and I also went to Chicago Mercantile. Mm. Everything went good with the stocks. Then there was a bit of a problem with the FBI, and we all ran to Italy. We stood in Vatican City because there's no extradition over there. I'm not going to get into all that because it's in the book. Anyway, a couple of years later, the Pope Paul VI, he died. So when they had the, to redo for the new Pope, they got Pope John Paul I. Pope John Paul I turned around and said that he was going to have everybody who was involved in the stock fraud scam, he was going to have them excommunicated, and he was going to have them defrocked, which meant they would fall under Italian law, and they would fall under United States law. So that's when they turned around. They says they flew into the United States to get a blessing from my grandfather that it was okay to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why I got involved with it also was for two reasons. One, I did a lot of the work with the stocks with them, but then they said, now you got to listen to their logic on this, that I would be their witness before God. I said, what are you talking about? What? They says, well, when we die, you're going to be our witness before God. When God asks us, well, did you kill him and did you make him suffer? You say, no, but our cousin Anthony was there and he was a witness that we didn't make him suffer. This
now,
is their
I'm
argument.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but what was the level of your grandfather in the mafia at that time? What level
was he?
He
was in the Black Hand. He was one of the bosses in the Black Hand.
And this is the Colombo family, right?
No, he wasn't
or
with
no.
them. My grandfather was strictly from Sicily.
No, but and what family was that with? And when I say family, I mean mob family.
He came from Sicily with Uncle Lucky Luciano's family, which in the United States here, they changed it over to the Genovese family after he died.
Okay, Genovese. Okay, got it. Okay, so you go over to Italy. What year is this now?
That was 1978.
So in 78, you go over there, I guess you're pretending you're on vacation, and how do you get access to the Pope? The fact that your
cousins
are cardinals?
No, I went back with my cousins on the jet that they had, and I told them, they said, how would you do? I said, if it was up to me, I said, I would put, does he'll take his tea sweet? They said, yes, and I would put Valium in his tea, and then when he falls asleep, you just get the potassium cyanide in an eyedropper, and you put it in the eyedropper, you put it in his mouth, squeeze it, and that's it.
Mm.
And that's all she wrote.
I never heard that he was murdered. That's why I don't, like I said, again, I don't mean to sound ignorant, but I don't remember hearing that a Pope was murdered.
All right, well, I'll tell you something. They've done articles on me from England, the United Kingdom, Italy done articles on my book, Spain, and they all went to the Vatican, and they approached the Vatican. The Vatican turned around. First, they said it didn't happen. Nothing happened. Then they refused to comment. They said they had no comment. They refused to comment. And then 3 weeks ago on the AHC channel, American History Channel, my cousin called me up. All of a sudden now they put a little special on about Pope John Paul I saying they suspect foul play in his death, and they suspect that he was poisoned. All this started coming out after my book. Oh, and then the Vatican also, they wrote their little article. They deemed me as one of the men that they feared because of what I said about the Vatican with Pope John Paul I.
So it, now, the fact that you've written this book and you're speaking the truth, is anybody going to be held responsible for his death, or has any charges been brought again, or are they no longer with us, these people that were?
No, all the people who did it, they're all gone. They all passed away.
So where does that leave you now, other than the author and knowing all this truth? And how do we prove that this happened?
Well,
where
like
does that
I
leave
always
you?
Told them, all they gotta do is exhume his body and they do a test, and they'll find the poison in his in the bone marrow or in his tissue.
Mm.
The Vatican
now,
refuses.
When he did die, what did they say was the cause of death? They said he died in his sleep, or I don't recall.
Yeah,
what
he died in his sleep.
I don't recall. Yeah, I don't recall
the
story. John, do you remember the story?
Yeah, they
I don't
said he died of natural
story, no.
causes. I was there.
Mm. Yeah, because I don't remember. I honestly don't remember them. I don't remember hearing about Pope John Paul I dying. I don't know why. What year was it?
Right. It was 1978. He was a pope for 33 days.
Ooh, 70. Only 33 days? You didn't give him a chance. Oh, my God. You didn't even give him a chance to be a pope.
Excuse me?
You guys didn't even give him a chance to be the pope. He was only a pope for 33 days.
Well, like my cousins explained to me, throughout history in the Catholic Church or in the Vatican, if they didn't like who was the pope, the cardinals got together, they conspired, and they killed him, and then they would put their own guy in. My cousins told me this has been going on for centuries.
Wow. Different time, I guess, right? Wow.
Now,
no, in the 70s.
I got a question for Anthony.
Sure.
Anthony,
yeah.
Now, did the your family have were they able to pick the successor to the pope, or did they have someone who they would prefer to be in that role so they wouldn't investigate
question,
the bonds or the you know what I'm saying? Is there someone that the family had so much control over the Vatican that they were able to line up the next pope? So
right.
God,
who picked
you guys
the successor?
Do that?
Well, all the cardinals had to have the vote, I guess you would call it, and everybody. But they all liked Pope John Paul II. They all liked him. He was a pretty fair guy. But there's a story in there about him that he almost got clipped. But everything worked out for him.
And why did he almost get clipped? What did he do?
All right, because what happened after they got him in, he turned around and he said that he was going to call a meeting about what happened with the stock board. So right away, these guys, these cardinals and the bishops and everything, they were all set to take this guy out. I mean, they're worse than the Vatican. They're worse than any wise guys you could ever imagine. Believe me when I tell you. But what happened at the meeting, Pope John Paul II turned around and said, whatever transpired before my reign as pope is completely forgotten about. I'm only concerned about from today on. He knew what would have happened.
Now, you said that this kind of came about when you came back from Vietnam. Now, before you went to Vietnam, were you involved in the family before then, or that's what put you into the family? So you were already involved in the mafia before that. Okay, wow. So now, okay, you're
well,
no longer involved,
in.
I assume. You're no longer involved.
Right.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask, actually, I meant to ask Rick this question as well, and I'll leave it up to you, too. When writing this book, did you have any thoughts of that? Were you afraid at all to write this book? I mean, were you afraid of repercussions that, people were going to, the backlash, that people were going to come after you? Because basically, I don't want to say you're a rat, but, that's what they call it, not me. A turncoat or whatever, and spilling beans on everything. I mean, were you worried about that, or?
No. First of all, everybody in my book that I wrote about is dead. They're all passed
okay,
away,
so that's
nobody,
a good thing.
Nobody can get hurt.
That's
nobody
a good
gets,
thing.
And like I said also, you take any family. I don't care what family it is in the United States. They all have bosses. Like they call them skippers or captains. They all got crews. In all of those crews, there's maybe 10 crews in a family. Every one of them has at least one guy that's talking to the feds. At least one guy. And they all
now,
write, they all started writing books about this. They all did.
Yeah. And the book also mentions the involvement in the Lufthansa crime as well, the heist. So
yeah,
what was your involvement in that?
I went down to Miami and got Maya Lansky, and Maya Lansky was the one who put it together.
Okay, now we were just talking about him with Rick. And
Maya
yeah,
Lansky
so now,
was like the second Florida to me.
Wow. Wow.
He was at my house.
You should have asked Rick a question while you were on the phone.
What?
You should have talked to Rick while he was on the phone.
I was on hold. What am I supposed to do? He ain't going to hear me if I'm on hold.
What am I supposed to do? Forget about it there, okay?
I'm on hold. What am I supposed to do?
I don't know. So now, all right. So what'd you think of the movie Goodfellas, since it mentioned Lufthansa and all that? How true is the movie to what actually transpired?
Okay.
All right.
Goodfellas, I'll tell you now, at least half of it is bullshit. Because Henry Hill was never privy to any of that information. And Henry Hill just stumbled to a club in Staten Island called the Cosmopolitan Lounge.
Uh-huh.
And I had a bookmaking operation in there. And I threw him out because he was dealing drugs. And then I met him years later, about 5 years after that, I met him. Somebody wanted to bring him down and put him in my cousin's crew with me. And when I met with the people, me and my cousin, we went and we met the gentleman who was bringing him down. As soon as Henry Hill came out of the car, I told my cousin. I said, that guy's a dope dealer. So he looked at me, my cousin. He said, wait a minute. I said, Henry, tell him the truth. Henry, am I lying? You're a fucking dope dealer. He didn't answer me. He walked back in the car.
And why is it the mafia didn't like the drugs? Was it because it was too easily traced with the police, or what was the issue with them not wanting to deal with drugs so much?
Well, drugs it ruins, not only does it ruin the family, but it ruins the neighborhoods. It also gives you a lot of you got a lot more heat. You know, and a lot more heat comes down on you. It's a higher crime also with the feds. But, you know, now a lot of people are into that. You know, it's not like it was. If it would have been the way it was back in the 70s and the 80s, I would have never wrote the book. I would have still been involved. But not the way things got now. Too much nepotism.
Right.
Too many people put their sons and their cousins and their nephews who never did a thing, who never proved themselves to be worthy to even come into this life, but they gave it to them. Or you're going out with somebody's mother, somebody's sister, or she's got a brother, and they're bringing them in left and right. It's not
now,
what it was years ago.
Oh, no, nothing's the way it is. It was the years ago. So now, other than the Pope and the Lufthansa stories, what else is in your book that people would be interested in reading about?
Mayor Koch. We kept Mayor Koch in as mayor in Brooklyn for 12 years.
Right.
What dirt
you got on him?
Oh, I got a lot of stuff on him. It's in the book. I got a lot of stuff on him with Bess Meyer.
Can you share one story with us about Mayor Koch?
Yeah. We had a company. They were doing the job on the West Side Highway. And a guy came to me from Olympia in York. He was the business agent named Leo DeRuba. Olympia in York is based in Canada, and they said they were looking for that contract over there to do all the whole West Side Highway, and they would piece it out to everybody.
Right.
I went to my friend Dominic's house, who was the one who set everything up. Bess Meyerson came down. I told her what the deal was. She said, I'll be back tomorrow. I'll tell you how much Ed wants. She came back the next day. She said, $2 million. You got the whole contract for the whole West Side Highway. From Lower Manhattan all the way uptown, and you'll have the, the right to like keep taking care of the property. I got in touch with the business agent. I told him. He came to see me about 2 days later with a suitcase. He goes, here you go, $2 million in cash. brought it to my friend Dominic's house. My friend Dominic used to be the deputy commissioner of Veterans Affairs. I did a lot of business with a lot of politicians. Mm-hmm. That's why it's in the briefcase. No, the suitcase rather. She took it to Koch. He got $2 million plus. He got 3% of the job. Meanwhile, they got the whole West Side Highway. They pieced it out, and they still to this day own all the maintenance contracts to other companies. So Olympia and York is very happy. They're up in Canada.
So what did Mayor Koch, what did he do that was wrong? What was the issue?
He gave them the bid. He gave them the contract.
Okay.
So in other words, let's say they say it goes to the lowest bid, the contract. So let's say your company put the lowest bid in. My company got the highest one. I paid off. I got the contract.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't. That's what the problem was. He gave it to you, even though it was the highest bid. He gave it to you guys. Right.
As long as he got paid, sure. Then there was an incident that had a club on West 6th Street in Brooklyn called the Desiree Club. Mm. And a gentleman got killed around the corner from the club. They whacked this guy right around the corner from my club. Mm. I had all cops, and I had cops, everybody over there. I had everybody in the club. I said, don't let nobody out of the club. I says, just leave it there. I said, we had a ton of cops, maybe about 4 or 5 squad cars, ambulance, everything. So me and my partner, Josie, we walked outside. I'm lighting up a cigar, and I see this big guy come. This guy had to be about 6'6", white shirt, blue pants with gold stars on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he's walking towards me. I looked at Joe. Joe looks at me. He says, I think you're going to get pinched. I said, yeah, I think so. I said, I don't know for what, but I'm going to get pinched. He says, I'll call the lawyer. The guy walks up to me. He goes, you Anthony? I look at him. He says, yeah. He goes to me, you Eddie's friend? I just looked at him. I said, Eddie's friend. He goes, yeah, you
Eddie Koch.
Right. So wait a minute, it didn't catch. So then he asked me 30. He goes, listen, I'm going to ask you one more time. Are you Eddie's friend? Then it clicked. He's talking about Ed Koch. I said, yes, I'm his friend. He goes, don't worry about it. Let people in and out of the club if you want. Don't worry about it. Meanwhile, I got a dead body right around the corner.
Wow.
A guy got whacked. Yeah. I was letting him in and out of the club all night long.
Have you ever done any jail time, Ed?
Yes. Yes, I was away.
How long were you gone?
I had a 5-year sentence.
5 years. And what was that for? Can you tell us or not?
Loan shark and extortion, conspiracy, organized crime, and racketeering.
And how did you get caught? Since you had the ins with politicians, how did you get caught? I mean, somebody ratchet out or what?
No, the people that were involved with the case with me, they put my name all over the tapes. There's nothing with me on the tape at all, not even talking. It's what everybody that kept on the tapes kept saying about me.
Wow. Wow. So what else is in the book other than all that stuff?
There was a fight. There's a thing about with this guy Louis the Lug, when they straightened him out, me and him had a bit of a problem. I have it with that. I have a score that I got from a dear friend of mine years ago. This guy Joe Lane, he's passed on now. A score where we were taking off the guy, and the guy was only about 5'7", and we posed as cops, and we handcuffed him outside, and then the guy realized we weren't cops. He went to run away, and I grabbed him by his hair, you know, because he had a little bit of long hair. Next thing I know, I see this guy running down the block, and I'm saying, the fuck, I didn't even feel nothing. My friend goes, look at your head. I ripped part of his scalp off. I was holding it in my hand.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But we finished the score because we had a half-hour time window with the cops. So we went upstairs to the house and did the score. We opened up the safe and took everything out of the safe.
Wow. So other than writing this book, what else are you doing with yourself these days? You're no longer involved with the mob, I'm guessing.
Right. I'm working on book two. I'm working on book two, and I've met with a couple of producers and directors that were discussing my life rights for a movie and for the series, for a cable series.
Oh, that's good. Good. Congratulations. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Good luck with that. And how long has When the Bullet Hits the Bone been out right now?
It's been out since the end of September. I have.
I said, oh, wow. That's great.
And I got another story in Florida where I burned 6 bingo parlors down in one night.
Why? Should I ask why?
We had bingo parlors. We had bingo parlors.
Yeah.
And my cousin was in Florida over 30 years. And these guys come up, they call themselves the good old boys. They're Italian guys that speak with a southern accent. I mean, I look at these guys, I start to laugh. But you have to read the book to really get the whole rest of the story. But they nicknamed me in Florida. They accused me, but they couldn't prove it. So they wrote an article, and they nicknamed me Tony the Torch.
Tony the Torch. That's a good nickname to have, right?
Well, you got to remember, when I was in Nam, I learned all about demolition also. I was a sniper.
Right.
I was an engineer, and I was a what?
No, I said
I was demolition.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where you learned how to do all that stuff.
Yeah, I got good training.
Wow. And you've had articles in the New York Post, obviously. I saw that, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's great. So what are you doing, a book tour now or a book signings anywhere?
No, I'm not doing a book tour. No, I just got it with it's in Barnes & Noble now. I'm going to make the arrangements to do some book signings. I got some other people that are working with me now. I just got to publish, you know, for publishers to get me book tours and other interviews and stuff. And I'm supposed to have an interview, I believe, next week. I'm supposed to be, Associated Press is going to interview me.
Oh, that's great. That means that'll go everywhere. Yeah. It could wind up anywhere. Everywhere and anywhere, for that case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the idea.
Well, that's good.
But
that's
I'm
good.
On
I'm happy
two,
for
and
you.
Then I'm gonna,
yeah. I said, that's good. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. Well, see, in book two, I'm also going to have some flashbacks when the Pope got killed, because I'm going to put in there about the Swiss Guard, what they did, about other cardinals who were pumping the head of Pope John Paul I, and unfortunately for him, he listened to them. And there's quite a few other things. I'm going to have about Vietnam. I went to kill the three cardinals. There were three different cardinals I had to kill at three different times. That was my mission.
U.S. cardinals or... Wait, U.S. cardinals?
No. Vietnamese colonels. No.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Come on, I'm with the United States Government Army. I'm going to kill my own people. Come on.
Well, I don't know. You're in the United States. You're killing your own people. I don't know. I'm asking the question. I don't know.
Hey, I got a question for Anthony. Hey, Anthony.
Yeah.
You were involved with the real family, the real mafia and everything. What do you think of all the portrayals of the Italian-Americans, such as The Sopranos, and even the new thing on Netflix with Al Pacino, by the Jimmy Hopper? Is that true, or is that a bunch of bullshit?
Okay, now I'm going to tell you something. You remember when I wrote to you, Joanna, about The Sopranos? Some of those stories were about me and my friends?
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Somebody told them, because somebody told them a lot of stuff, and I don't know who it was. But that's why I said, when you have that guy with The Sopranos on, you should put me on with him.
Yeah,
Artie Pasquale.
Yeah, Artie Pasquale.
Yeah.
He can't make Wednesday, but he wants to come on.
Yeah, whenever he's ready, you can call me. I got no problem with that. But
I'll let you know when he's on. I'll let you know when he's on, and you could call in and talk with him.
Yeah, that's good. First of all, let me tell you something. In The Sopranos, they had an episode where Christopher pulled the gun on Tony Soprano, who was the boss. If that was real life, that kid would have been dead.
Right.
Nephew, son, cousin, whatever, he has to die automatically. You pull a gun on the boss, that's automatic death sentence, no matter who you are. Could be his own son. You die.
Mm.
That's the law.
So,
and then about Tony doing drugs, no. The drugs and everything, half the stuff he was doing, no. It ain't like that. His own crew. If that was true in real life, half the stuff he'd done, his own crew would have killed him.
Wow. So out of all the, to spin off of John's question, out of all the mafia movies that are out there, mob movies, shows, whatever, which one do you think is true to life the most out of all the movies and series or whatever is out there? Which one do you think is closest to the actual life?
Truthfully, the one that's closest to the actual life without really exaggerating, and I'll give you an answer why, was The Godfather 1.
Mm.
And I'll tell you why. Because Godfather 1 and part of Godfather 2, that was about Joe Bonanno, who was a very dear friend of my family's. That was about Joe Bonanno. That's more that and the movie that he made, Honor Thy Father. Those are about the closest ones. All this
where are you
stuff
from?
Is exaggerated.
Where are you from, Anthony? Are you from Brooklyn or where are you from, actually?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn.
Okay.
I'm from South Brooklyn.
South Brooklyn, okay. And now, do you have kids yourself or?
Yes.
Okay, and do they know about your background? Obviously, yes.
Yes, they do. But no, they're not involved, if that's your next question. No.
No,
why
won't?
Away from that.
No, you have kids. You have kids. You're living a normal life. But I hope you don't mind me asking you this question, but how's your conscience with everything that you've done over the years?
Okay.
Because you've obviously whacked people. You've obviously whacked people. I mean, you know.
I never said I did that.
I didn't say you did, but I'm guessing you did.
There's no statute of limitations on anything like that. There's statute of limitations on everything else. But I never said I did anything like that.
Nope. I didn't say you did. I'm guessing. How about knowing, let me phrase it differently, knowing that what you were involved in caused so many deaths. How is your conscience on that? I mean, it's been many years, so.
I haven't caused anybody's death, let me put it that way. But one thing I will tell you, anything I ever done, anything I ever got involved in, was always with people in the same life that I was in. I never messed with legitimate people. But legitimate people do not understand the ramifications of being involved with somebody like me. If you're legitimate and you say you want to be with me, you got to understand one thing. You better have that envelope for me every week. I don't want no nothing. I got to get the piece of the action every week for whatever you got going.
Right. So pretty much what you were involved in was taking care of the business within the business.
Yeah, but I also had a bookmaker business. I had a numbers business, a sports business. I had a Shylock business. I had quite a few acting sessions in Coney Island. I had quite a few businesses going. After hour clubs I had.
So now is it true based on, I mean, not saying you did it, but is it true in the mob families when we're dealing with loan sharks that if you didn't pay up, they really did beat the shit out of you and almost kill you or maybe even killed you?
Well, you know what? It really depends on the guy you deal with because everybody's different. Mm. Everybody's different. But, you know, the thing is this. They all got to try to put that persona on of being a gangster and a tough guy. And half of them, and I'll tell you right now, and half of them aren't. They're really not.
Right, so in your opinion, today's mob, is it gone entirely or is it somewhat behind the scenes that obviously not as big as it used to be? But, you know, since John Gotti's gone, I mean, is it still going on in some way, shape, or form?
All right, let me put it this way. Let's just say it's still going on, but let's say it's in a semi-coma. Because the new guys that are in, they do not follow the old ways at all. They do not even respect the old ways. They don't follow. And the thing is this. You're getting guys and you're bringing guys in that never prove themselves to do anything.
Right.
And these are the first guys that turn around and give you up when something happens. But like I said before, it's because it's either a nephew, a cousin, or the daughter, or a niece or nephew's going out with a guy, or a guy in the family's going out with some girl, and he's got brothers and cousins, he brings them in. It's not the way it goes. It's not like it was years ago.
So if Junior would have gotten the position, you would have been upset about that, obviously, because he didn't deserve it.
Who, John's son?
Yeah. He
wouldn't
have liked that.
He got it because of his father. He got everything because of his dad.
So you wouldn't have liked it personally because, like you said, he didn't earn it.
No, he didn't earn it. But then again, he walked away from everything also because he knew he couldn't handle it.
He definitely couldn't handle it. He couldn't handle the police, that's for sure.
No, he can't.
He must have realized
that, you know, once he really got involved, that this isn't for him. He really can't handle it. There's a lot more to it than what you think. But you got to remember something. I was born in it. You got to remember. Lucky Luciano was my grandmother's brother. Okay, Frank Costello was my grandfather's cousin. Anil De La Croce was my grandfather's cousin. Tom Michael Galletti was my other grandfather's cousin. Danny Celenti was another cousin. Maya Lansky, forget about it. The guy was like a second father to me. He was always at the house. Carlo Gambino used to come to the house. All the bosses used to come to the house on Baltic Street. And then when they when my family bought the house on 12th Street, they all used to come over there.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Well, I think we're coming to a close, right. Anthony.
All right.
John?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So I just want to say, folks, pick up the new book, When the Bullet Hits the Bone, by Anthony Luciano Raimondi, and give it a read and see what you think. And I'm looking forward to reading it. And I'm very curious, I have to say that. But thank you so much, Anthony. You can find Anthony's book at Amazon. He's in Barnes & Noble, and he's doing some book signings. Do you have a website, Anthony, where people can go to?
Anthony at gangstercigars.com is my email, but you can either get me under Anthony S. Raimondi or Anthony Luciano.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for joining us. I appreciate
you
giving us this retrospect on the family, and you definitely opened my eyes, and I appreciate it very much. And come back sometime.
Let me know when the guy from The Sopranos is going to be on. I'll give you a call.
I will. I will. I'll send you a message. I'll let you know when he's going to be on.
Keep in touch. Anytime you have somebody on that you want me to ask questions, then there'd be no problem with that. Because you got a lot
you
of guys that talk and don't know what they're talking about.
You got it. Anthony, thank
you
so much. You have a good night.
Merry Christmas, Anthony.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Yes.
Same to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right.
Well.
Bye-bye.
Well, folks. Well. That was quite an interesting evening. Rick Perrello, the author of Bombs, Bullets, and Bribes about the Jewish Mafia, and Anthony Raimondi about the Italian Mafia, When the Bullet Hits the Bone. When you get a chance, pick them up if you're into the Mafia stories, and you'll really, I think, enjoy them based on what I've heard tonight. I'm definitely intrigued and interested. And thank you again to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, and Catskills Provisions. I always forget their first name. I don't know why. Catskill Provisions and KWV Wines. John, anything else going on with you, honey, before we sign off?
No. Just wish everybody the Christmas spirit. Get those lights and trees up and have a good time.
Yep. Well, on the 15th, it looks like we're having Dean Chiletto on. He's an Elvis impersonator who has a series out called Married to Elvis. It's a comedy, and I'm interested in hearing what he's got to say about that. And also, we have Don DeFiore on. He's the son of Ron DeFiore, and Ron was the father on Hazel, if you remember that. And that should be quite fun. And we have some amazing guests coming up the rest of the month. However, we don't have a full month for you because of the holiday. But we promise to give you a full-packed show for the shows that we do have. So, John, I thank you as always. I love you. We thank you all for listening. Thank you to our guests, our listeners. And we will see you on the 15th, on Sunday at 7 p.m.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Night, John.
Good night.
Night.